Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to our, I hope it's the 15th, I think so, I'll be corrected by my associates if it is not. I believe we begin on the 15th program, and Letters on Occult Meditation video commentary. We're on page 58. And today is the 28th of July, and we have been considering the creative and the constructive uses of the breath and of certain tones and subtones in, of course, the general assigning of the meditation. So let's see. We have been considering the constructive, creative, and creative methods of using the sacred word. Now to the destructive methods, which have their usefulness. So, this leads to the second factor we are considering, the destructive factor. In emancipation comes the breaking of the chains. In liberation comes the abolition of the old forms. In the domination of matter is seen the liberation of the spirit. All right, these are all well-accepted ideas. So, in the sounding of the sacred word, in its sevenfold sense, and this whether applying to man the microcosm or the solo logos the macrocosm, comes the escaping from the shattered forms. So this must be very important. This dynamic must be very important after the fourth initiation, because there you have a shattered form. The form of the causal body, whether microcosmic or macrocosmic, and there must be an escaping of the essence which has been contained within the causal body into the next higher source, namely the spiritual triad for the microcosm and maybe some corresponding triad for the solar logos. So, the escaping from the shattered forms. Yeah. And first, in the outbreathing, the attraction of matter, then in the inbreathing, the gradual shattering of the material forms and the leaving of them behind. So we have involution and evolution. And, you know, obviously, we human beings here are on the upward arc and are gradually seeking to shatter the material forms which have our essence confined and even in a way imprisoned. So now, and let's just see, was this all? So was this all regarding the destruction of forms? Or destructive use of the sacred word? Let's see. Meditation and the word. So maybe that was all. Let's see if further information. Let's see if further info is given regarding the destructive use of the word. So meditation and the word. I have pictured for you on the systemic scale. I pictured this for you on the systemic scale. Okay, and by this we mean solar systemic. Now let me apply it to meditation and see how it will work. Meditation within the microcosm and see how it will work. Man, when meditating, aims at doing two things. At the formation of thoughts, at the bringing down to the concrete levels of the mental plane of abstract ideas and intuitions, and maybe, you know, they are different. This is what might be called meditation with seed. So forms are still important here. And we retain these forms and transfer them to lower planes in the bringing down of them. We concretize them, actually, or make them more concrete than they were in the place that they were received. We give, you know, as they say, we give specific instances. We give examples using the mind. So this is meditation with seed. Now, what else? At the aligning of the ego and at the creation of the vacuum betwixt the physical brain and the ego, which results in the divine outpouring or spiritual, if you will, and the consequent shattering of the forms and subsequent liberation. This might be termed meditation without seed. And what we have is a vacuum created. Meditation without seed. So we really are into abstraction here. I'm sorry. And into subtle results. And we're not so much into the building of forms that we take down into the lower concrete mind. Rather, we are in the divine outpouring, which produces the shattering of forms. Now, probably we all have some experience with both of these kinds of meditation, more likely with the first, effectively so, than with the second. Okay. At a certain period in evolution, the two blend. The seed is dropped, and the vacuum is then created, not so much between the higher and lower vehicles as between them and the intuitional plane or plane of harmony, which is the first plane or systemic plane of real abstraction. So this is a very interesting idea, combination, a combination of the two methods exists. All right. All right. Therefore, in the sounding of the sacred word in meditation, man should, if rightly sounding it forth, be able to do both the creative work and the destructive work as does the Logos. Both. It will be the reflection in the microcosm of the cosmic process. And this we have been discussing. We have been discussing this in the foregoing pages. He will attract to his bodies matter of a finer kind and cast out that which is coarser. And, you know, this will be occurring pretty well simultaneously when we sound the sacred word correctly. He will attract to his bodies matter of the finer kind repeatedly, constantly, upgrading the matter of his personality vehicles. He will formulate thought forms that attract to themselves finer matter and repudiate that which is of a lower vibration. Okay, that's quite clear. We need to learn to do this to constantly improve. Well, it's a kind of a transmutation, isn't it? Whenever you're involved with improving matter, the constituents, the material constituents of form, we're involved with transmutation. When we're involved with adjusting forms to each other, improving the general conformation of forms, and adjusting them harmoniously to each other, we're involved with transformation. And when we're dealing with the glorification of the forms, which have been made more in conformity to the archetypes, and these forms containing matter which has been improved in its quality, then we're dealing with the glorification that we call transfiguration. So this is all about the sounding of the word, right? This whole section here looks like. He should so sound the word that alignment will be automatically made. You know, because we can mindlessly sound the word, you know, without depth of concentration, and the result will be what? You know, rather an idle performance which is ineffective because we don't really think about what we're doing. It's like Master Moria saying, well, if you take vitamins with concentration, it's worth so much more than just taking them. He should so sound the word that alignment will be automatically made and the necessary vacuum created, eventuating in a downflow from above. And, you know, we can ask ourselves, when we sound the word, does this happen? Are we automatically then, in sounding the word, really aligned with the soul in such a way that there is a downflow, let us say, through the mind and the brain? And then in the magical process, the sentient vehicle has also to be subjected to the descent of the proper thought form. All these effects can transpire when the word is correctly intoned, and each meditation should see the man more aligned. So what we have, as usual, is alignment in the beginning and alignment at the end. The effort to create alignment in the beginning takes us through a process where alignment is perfected at the end of the whole process. So every time the man will be more and more aligned, should dispense with matter of low vibration in one or other of his bodies, and should open up the channel to a greater extent and so provide a more adequate vehicle for the higher levels. So let's see, a widened channel and a transmutation of vehicles provides greater illumination or light in the personality. And certainly in our meditation, that is what we seek. Eventually, the earth is to become a great station of light within the solar system, and we too, in our own little spheres, have to become stations of light so that we can, when meeting others, working with others, transmit that light. And the face of them upon the darkened way receives that light. For them, the way is not so dark. And if I could just kind of include that, I would, if I can just find it, yep. And I hope to find it in just a moment. This way. For them, the way is not so dark. And there's only one of them in the whole, and here it is, very beautiful saying that, again, I think, you know, should be memorized as much as may be possible. And we'll bring it over to here, where I know you're still seeing something. Yeah. And what page is that? It is in Dina 2, which is filled with wonderful sayings from the old commentary. It's Dina 2. Page 15. And I'm going to make it smaller. You know, it's just right now too big. But and this I'll make bigger. All right. So the face of them upon the darkened way receives that light. For them, the way is not so dark. So each one of us has to become a station of light so that for others, the way is not so dark. But, and let's see if I always need my brackets, you know. Without them, it's impossible to meaningfully put in some comments which may help the viewer, the listener, well, the viewer especially. But until correctness is possible, the effect produced by the use of the word is very little, which is fortunate for the man who uses it. Yeah. Well, because we don't want to be materializing forms which can be obstructive. We have a problem with the materializing of forms. And there are so many, you know, that simply are not plan aligned. Okay. This is not, yeah, there we go. So, you know, as the sorcerer's apprentice discovered, he could certainly multiply the brooms to carry water for him, but they began to multiply by themselves and they got completely out of control, you know. The sort of magic of the Walt Disney cartoons somehow bringing the seventh ray into the life of the children. There's a lesson in that, you know. Don't think that if you relinquish the factor of control, you can successfully practice occultism. It will turn back upon you, and you will be unfortunate. In the studying of the seven great breaths and their effect upon each plane, a man can find out much that should transpire on the different subplanes of each plane, especially in relation to his own development, because, well, why is this? Okay. I'll try to get that here. Why is this? Because there is a reflection on each systemic subplane of what is happening on each cosmic subplane or normal systemic solar planes. In other words, let's just say our mental plane is a systemic or solar plane, but it's also a cosmic subplane, and that cosmic subplane, that normal systemic mental plane, that normal systemic solar plane, all those things are the same, has further subplanes, and then even subplanes. So every time you're dealing with one of these systemic or solar planes or one of these cosmic subplanes, it actually has 49 divisions. In the studying of the basic note of the solar system, which was stabilized in system one, and that is the note Fa, green, F, the fourth in music, or the interval of the fourth. Now remember, we do not have the key note of the present solar system, which is a dominant and not a tonic, apparently. A dominant is five notes above a tonic, or tonic, you know, you might say. The thing about the usual music is that it always returns to a tonic note or to a related note like a dominant. And it centers around certain chief notes and the chords built upon them. Now, this is not the case in the kind of music which is not based on conventional tonality, such as the 12-tone music, which was popular in the early 20th century among, you know, thinking musicians. Not necessarily, I wonder about feeling musicians, but certainly around musicians who were looking for a system to extricate them from the disintegration of the harmonic language which they were experiencing. So anyway, in the studying of the basic note of the solar system, which was stabilized in system one, then much can be found out about the use of the word. I'll kind of put it in the green color because it is related to the third ray. And the hint lies here for our consideration. And why is that? Because, you know, well, You almost have to constantly ask yourself, and why is that? And why is that? And then we will begin to find out the reasons behind the hints that he gives. That's not what I want. I don't know how that happened, but here we go. I'll just say the first major solar system was materially focused through the note Fa, green, and related to the dense physical plane. Also very much a personal mental solar system, because in a way the whole personality is cosmically dense. Our personality functioning on the lower 18 subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, or at least on the lower 18 subplanes, maybe I should call it, of the cosmic physical plane, is related to a material density. So maybe that's the hint. I mean, much can be found out about the use of the word on the physical plane. Well, now, maybe a hint is here given, and maybe in studying the third, well, in studying the note, maybe, in studying the fundamental note of the present solar system, much can be found out about the use of the word on the astral plane, and so forth. Read the next solar system. Much will be found out. The lower mental plane. The first major solar system was material focused. We are astrally focused in relation to the note. Well, there's a connection between the soul and the astral body, and between the monad, which may be the theme of the next solar system, and the mental body. So maybe in these thoughts lies some unveiling of the hint. This is a soul solar system, and the secondary soul of the solar logos is really brought into prominence in this solar system. The person, now I'm getting another thought here. We know also that the personality ray reflects itself in the dense physical body, and that the soul ray reflects itself in the astral body, and the mental ray in the let's do it this way. And the monadic ray in the lower mental body. And, you know, he definitely says that elsewhere. So let's just say that the ray of your personality may show up as quite prominent in the ray of your physical body. A man had a first-ray personality. He thought he had a first-ray physical body because the personality first ray was reflecting itself in the physical body, when really the physical ray was the third. So there is a ray impression coming from the three periodical vehicles, from the personality ray. It is a reflection into the dense physical body from the soul ray, a reflection into the astral body from the monadic ray, whichever one of those, at least according to my hypothesis. There are two. But the monadic ray, whichever one, reflects itself in the mental body. So if you have a third ray monad, your mental body is going to show persistent signs of the third ray, even if the actual ray of your mind is not the third ray. And thus it goes with the soul. Let's just say you have a second ray soul, but maybe you don't have yet a second ray astral body. Maybe you have a six ray astral body, but still the ray of the soul will reflect itself in that astral body. So you'll have kind of a 2-6 situation. I know an individual with a first ray soul, and maybe the astral body is really on the sixth ray, but maybe because the soul ray is the first ray, there's a lot of the first ray in the astral body. So you get the pattern. Okay. In the endeavor to find the note for this solar system, the note of love and wisdom, which can also be the note me, or yellow, or Buddhic note, or the note of the sixth principle of love, wisdom, the student will make the necessary communication between the emotional or desire plane and the intuitional plane. And this is part of Antikarana building. And find out the secret of the emotional plane. Now, remember, the key note of our solar system is a perfect fifth from some do or fundamental note, which is not specified. We've been discussing it. Could be the note C, could be the note A. And there's chance that the note D may be somewhat involved when we're dealing with the next solar system, which has a first ray personality, I do believe, just the way we presently have a second ray personality, and previously, I believe, had that third ray personality. So, Buddhi sheds light on the secret of the emotional plane. And we know that, you know, in the Antikarana building, one of the first things we have to visualize is a connection between the astral and emotional planes. And in the study of the word on the mental level and its effect in form building, the key to the erection of Solomon's temple will be discovered, and the pupil will develop the faculties of the causal body and eventually find liberation from the three worlds. Well, again, you know, amazing statements in this little book, which we don't want to pass over. I think it's a very interesting idea that in the study of the word on mental levels and its effect in form building, the key to the erection of Solomon's temple will be discovered, and the pupil will develop the faculties of the causal body and eventually find liberation from the three worlds. And it looks like this study is undertaken before liberation through the destruction of the causal body can actually occur. So now we have to ask, is the higher mind involved, or is the study to be confined to lower mental levels? Because so far we've had the study in respect to the physical plane, the study with respect to the astral plane, all part of the personality, and do we venture to the higher mental plane here to study as well? As I said, we know that the monadic ray has a strong effect upon the mental ray, and of course, since there is a projection of the monad, an extension of it, into the, what should we call it, the higher mind, where the causal body is to be found, the monad is influential in both places. So the soul ray will carry something of the monadic ray, but then so will the lower mind. There will be an impression. And then how are we to really study these things? We need some guidance, I think, in our study of the word on these various levels. So okay. Here is something that I think we should try to bring into a certain, maybe into the color. The light blue color. And we will find out the secret of the emotional plane, whatever that is. Now, we do know there are soul secrets, and they're given in esoteric astrology. The secret of the soul, which Capricorn seems to rule, and the secret of various initiations. Why are they called secrets? Well, they're not easily accessible. But this question of finding the note for this solar system is not as easy as it seems, because the note of love wisdom has to do with the sixth principle, as stated here, and also with the color blue. So let's just say also the color blue is involved in searching for the note of this solar system. What is the dough? Now, if you have a fixed dough, it is usually the red note C. A movable dough can be anything, any scale. the foundational note of any scale. I bet you're tired of me offering these musical analogies, especially, yeah, I do repeat them quite a bit. Maybe it's because, for me, music is one of the ways in, a key to the secret doctrine. Maybe it's some kind of old Pythagorean training. On the other hand, different people have different ways in. And studying the psychology of the different students who seek entry into the understanding of the secret doctrine is most interesting. There are just so many different ways in, you know, mathematical and prakritic, you know, this close study of matter. I mean, they're given in a footnote here, somewhere in Cosmic Fire, and there are just a number of them. And I think it's important if we want to, so to speak, bark up the right tree, we've got to know what our method is to enter into a deeper understanding of the secret doctrine. So it looks like here that we have been studying a constructive method of creative method of using the sacred word, a destructive, and then in general, the use of the word. And maybe we are, I've gone back up a few pages, and maybe we're on this fourfold list, whichever postulate it is related to, the creative effect of the sacred word, we've done that. And we did maybe a very short look at the destructive effect of the sacred word. We'll see whether it comes up again. And now perhaps we're in its pronunciation and use in individual meditation, and maybe we'll go on to group and congregational work and also for specific ends. And so, you know, that that list is found right before we get into page 53. So he's really combined the two, constructive and destructive, in one exposition. So we might say one and two of the fourfold list. And then he's repeating as he goes and saying some fascinating things about sound in this really daunting subject. Giving us then the seven great breaths and maybe seven great subtones. Looks like, as I've been saying, I may be incorrect, but it looks like the subtones are connected with the breaths. So, you know, maybe we can condense all this by reading the original. And I find it so fascinating, this question of what is the keynote of the chord. A keynote being somehow related to the fifth great breath and the fifth subtone and to the fifth in music. It's the dominant. It's called a fifth from the do. This keynote is located a fifth away, or let's say above, the dough for the scale we are using. And every scale is built upon that dough, which automatically has the dominant, which is do, re, mi, fa, sol. S-O-L is the dominant. And of course, there are a lot of associations that we can make with that. And then we began our program where we are now. So we're dealing here with meditation and the word, meditation with seed, meditation without seed. And we're looking at a simultaneous attraction and repulsion of suitable and unsuitable matter, respectively, where both operate at the same time. And we're just trying to see how we can make the word really effective. He'll tell us, you know, when we sound it inwardly and we hear it inwardly, it's more effective even than with the normal outer sounding. I met a group once long ago. It was an illuminating experience. The young man who was sort of heading the group, he was dying of AIDS. And it somehow forced him to be extremely demonstrative, exterior, in his use of the sacred word, almost forced, too loud, too fearful, really, thinking that putting in a lot of force would somehow cure him. I don't think it did. I lost touch with him. But it's not just how loud we say the Om, how much we force it in an outer sense. It's something very internal. So we've now looked at the study of the word on the physical, the emotional, and the mental subplanes, the concrete mind, and maybe also the higher mind. And these studies allow for improvement of the vehicles and also the building in of the faculties of the causal body. In the study of the word on the mental levels, and there, you know, we have to be careful because maybe he does mean lower mind and higher mind, and its effect in form building, the key to the erection of Solomon's temple. So much of it happens unconsciously and for a long time, will be discovered, and the pupil will develop the faculties of the causal body consciously develop them, because they do develop constantly but unconsciously for the evolving man in the earlier stages. But we then start to take part in that development, and we sound the Om, bringing in purposefully matter of a more refined nature, and expel that which no longer vibrates to our higher intention. And then liberation comes. The student, then going on now, the student must remember nevertheless that he has first to find his personality note. Well, we struggle with that so much when we do our Ray work, what is my personality? And is it stable? Are you in later part of life? Is it shifting? Because oftentimes the personality does shift to another ray so that by the end of a particular incarnation, you have the personality ray that you will have when you enter the subsequent initiation. Of course, sometimes the ray stays the same, as in the case of various artists who get a lot of practice expressing on a particular ray. He has first defined his personality note and then the egoic before he can touch the monadic chord. Just such a simple and straightforward statement. And, you know, and I would just say, go to esoteric astrology. I can just spell it. Around pages 222 and 223, and you'll see basically that the Tibetan says, before you interpret the chart, find the personality ray. And in the case of more advanced people, for whom the soul ray has emerged, find that. Then you can set up a much more useful chart, and you can see the astrological factors through which that personality ray is working. And even though you don't yet have really the chart of the soul, you do at least have factors in the normal horoscope through which the soul of a certain ray can work. You know, in my own case, if I think I have a second ray soul, I'd look for what's going on with Jupiter and maybe certain of the signs of the zodiac, like Gemini, Virgo, and Pisces. And if I think I have a fourth ray personality, I'd really look to the moon and Mercury and see what they are doing. And, you know, that's the way you can do it for yourself. I would say not everybody has to become like an esoteric astrologer. I don't think Alice Bailey ever became such in the sense of doing charts, but she knew certainly enough of the fundamentals to make it possible to understand people and to, I would say, give them the right kind of advice. And we'll be called upon to do that. So, you know, even a little bit goes a long way. Ascendant, sun sign, moon sign. Moon sign, sun sign, ascendant. It goes a long way towards determining the direction, the correct direction of the person through the incarnation. So discover your personality note, you know. What is that? And sometimes it's so difficult, and years even, speaking from experience, are spent trying to locate that personality ray, which may be relatively new to your present life demonstration, or may have been the ray for a while, in which case it might be stronger and have more momentum and more presence. So at least discover your personality ray and soul ray. Maybe before we're not going to have that monadic chord sounding fully until we do the perfect third of the personality and the fifth, the dominant of the soul. When he has done that, he has for himself sounded his own threefold word and is now an intelligent creator animated by love. So let's just say, the personality and the soul are active, are known, active, and effective together. And then if we can add to that qualities of the spiritual triad, which hold in one respect the same ray as the soul ray, and in another respect are reflecting the monadic ray, at least one of them, as well. And then a kind of goal is reached. But when we can really touch the monadic cord, then indeed the goal is reached. When we can touch the monadic cord, then indeed the goal is reached. Okay. Now I'll just, you know, kind of go on here, admitting that I kind of get lost in the outline form, which I'm sure the Tibetan has presented very clearly, and then I go try to trace these things, and the outlines don't look so clear to me, but at least the substance of them should be coming through. So some practical hints, and we're still, well, we're either in very late Gemini or early Cancer of the year 1920. Alice Bailey said, don't pay too much attention to the dates affixed to various lessons because they may have been given quite a bit before the date that is given for them. But anyway, that's maybe not so important right now. We know she was a Gemini, and we know that Gemini is one of the major signs of the second ray, and we know that Master Kudumi has for one of his important signs Gemini, and we infer that the Tibetan has Gemini, since he is a major messenger of the hierarchy. Mercury Gemini must be prominent for him. So, you know, it's enough to know that, look at Foster Bailey, Gemini rising, and Mary Bailey, Sun in Gemini, Leo rising, just like Alice Bailey, though a different ray. Okay. So a few practical hints, and naturally in the midst of all this complexity, we are grateful for the practical hints. I wish to make clear this afternoon that it is not possible for me, nor wise and appropriate, to give you different keys, the different keys in which the sacred word can be intoned. I can do no more than indicate general principles. Well, I notice he's using the word keys. This word of keys. Is being used in a musical sense. Each human being, each unit of consciousness is so unlike any other. You know, that's in terms of the manifestation, not in terms of essence, of course. Is so unlike any other that the individual need can only be supplied when full causal consciousness exists on the part of the teacher, which certainly it does for Master DK, because he's gone long beyond dispensing with the causal body, And when the pupil has himself reached a point where he is willing to know, to dare, and to be silent. And actually, that is the sequence. So, you know, here is the sequence. Will, know, dare, be silent. The soul, well, maybe it's the monad and triad that wills, the spiritual will is coming from that. The soul that knows, the personality that dares, and the personality vehicles are rendered into silence. The dangers involved in the misuse of the word are so great that we dare do no more than indicate basic ideas and fundamental principles and then leave the aspirant to work out for himself the points necessary for his own development and to carry out the needed experiments until he finds for himself that which he needs. Well, DK has here given us the reason for his reticence. So I'll just say, here follows reason for DK's reticence and also that of any other master offering instruction. So, you know, unless we are confident that a teacher has somehow full causal consciousness, it's not even partial, it's got to be full, we cannot really accept detailed meditations from them in the confidence that it will be effective in really building and utilizing the causal body and in using the sacred word in such a way that will not be destructive. Only that which is the result of self-effort, of hard struggle, and of even bitter experience is of permanent and lasting value. Only as the disciple through failure, notice it's listed first, through failure, through success, through hardly won victories in which hard labor have been involved, and the bitter hours that succeed defeat, adjusts himself to the inner condition where he adjusts himself to the inner condition, will he find the use of the word scientifically and experimentally of value? His lack of will defends him largely from the misuse of the word, whilst his endeavor to love guides him eventually to its correct intoning. Only that which we know for ourselves becomes inherent faculty. Well, that's, I think I can outline this, or at least highlight it. Basically saying it doesn't make so much difference what even a fine teacher tells you. It's got to be what you work out for yourself. And I just want to see where I went. Yeah, I went there. Okay. I want to give a different color to it. So basically, you know, it's the Buddha's message once again. Rely upon yourself. Rely upon yourself. And that self is not just the personality self, though it is included in the self upon which you have to rely. Love takes us there, where we need to be with respect to the sacred word. Self-effort, hard struggle, bitter experience. Whew. Only that is of permanent and lasting value. And we will fail. We have failed. And we have to learn the lessons of failure. Maybe it happens a lot between the first and second initiations. And I'm sure that the rich young man who went sadly away, in a way temporarily turning his back on the Christ, also, though he was an initiate of the third degree, knew the meaning of failure. The idea is not to give up, though the conviction of failure sees us, and though many recriminations flood into our consciousness, not to give up. Anyway, the spirit is such a powerful prod, electrified, you might almost say, that we will never really be allowed to give up for very long before we are again stimulated into a directed evolutionary activity. The statements of a teacher, no matter how profoundly wise he may be, are but mental concepts until experimentally part of a man's life. Hence, I can but point the way. Reminds you of China's motto, you know, I indicate the way. Certainly the fourth root race has a lot of wisdom, and the work of the Chinese schools connected with Shambhala have to be very useful. China and Japan having two of the schools, one preparatory, one more advanced, but then again is Western China, Tibet. Okay, hence I can but point the way. I may give but general hints, and the rest must be threshed out by the student of meditation for himself. So we cannot think that by getting hold of a book and even reading it with a degree of comprehension that we will arrive at the goal without great expenditure of our own experimental attitude. Okay, well, now we get into this question of the use of individual meditation. We have been, for a while, dealing with the constructive and destructive uses of the sacred word. And if I go back to, you know, somehow page 53, I try to memorize those pages, so no, that's not it. So find, and let's see if I can find. Let's see here. Yes, well, yes. Having made it back to page 53 at last, we have the fundamental postulates based on the eventually seven fundamentals of the secret doctrine. We have the creative effect of the sacred word and the destructive effect, and he's kind of considered them together, because at a certain point they must be operative together. And now, if I said so differently earlier, now comes the pronunciation. But we have had something on the use of the sacred word. So, yeah, that's where we are. And I think, I think the thing to do is to yes, the thing to do now is to conclude here. We've gone from 57, 58, and I probably should have looked at the page where we were, and we're on page 61, and we're going to use, get into the pronunciation and use, of the sacred word in meditation. So we've had the postulates, and we've had the creative and destructive use of the word, and now pronunciation and use. So 61 is the key, and we will have gone from 57 57, 58 to 61. All right. And now I'll take these down, because I'm going to say, okay, that's been enough for this program, and we get into a whole new subject. Sometimes I offer these at a particular timing, and sometimes the subject determines when the program will change. So here we are. And this has been program 15, and it has been the 28th of July, and we've gone from 57, 58 to 61, not much, but enough. And we're going to do program 16. And our day still is the 28th, at least I hope it will be, but I'll still put down the X's just in case I don't get to it. And that will disrupt. Yeah, that will take us to where we need to go. You've got to admit that this work on the sacred word really points us in directions which are barely fathomable to people of our type. We're just, let's be honest, we're just beginners here, really. Even though compared to so many human beings, we have maybe come a long way, because we've had the experience over a long period of time, sometimes using time wisely and often not. But there's so much farther to go. So very soon now we'll pick up the pronunciation of the sacred word in individual meditation. And, don't want that. Here's what I'll do. So, we have had the postulates, the constructive and creative use of the word, and now the pronunciation. Use of the word. That seems to be where we are. Hi. Let's go back. We are recording, and this is where we are. Well, looks like everything has disappeared. Let's go back here and if I stop sharing, I just show myself, and that will be the end of our work for right now. So, going on then to program 16 as soon as we can. Talk to you soon. Lots of love, many blessings. Turn off the recording.